Now on to Delphina. Delphina is fascinating, intelligent, articulate, and brave in her own way. Her words to inspire designers in these times are hugely valuable. Enjoy the conversation. Welcome to the Garden of Ideas, Dr. Delphina Fantini van Dietmar. It's a great pleasure to have you with us today. With your work as a biologist and a design researcher and co-founder of the Design Research Society, I understand that you work a lot in terms of the human nature interactions and starting to think about the role that nature plays in our relationships. In opening, I wondered if there's a way that you would like to introduce yourselves and maybe something that you don't normally say in introducing yourselves you could share.
Yes, I mean, going back to definition distinctions, it's a difficult one. I studied biology. I did my PhD in the RCA, very much inspired by Dostoevsky, this character that was questioning that society that apparently worked fine, and he was asking, what are we doing? So back in the time, my thesis, my PhD thesis was about this idea of Silicon Valley mentality and what smartness means. And I really kept that kind of idiotic kind of questioning, but what are we doing? And currently I'm working in fashion, so really rethinking how we should live and how fashion has definitely changed the way it's been operating. And this, going back to your topic, reconnecting with nature is such a key feature that we should be embedding deep down from education. But then this should definitely permeate into industry and also to how we conceive ourselves as a human. Because if you don't touch that touch point, it's difficult to get this through. So yeah. One of my biggest interests is this idea of alternative design futures. And yeah, at some point, how design can help revision future lifestyles as well.
Beautiful. Can we start very broad? I'd like to start with stories of separation, you know, and thinking about also Eastern and Western worldview. So I realized quite recently just how inherent the stories of separation are in Western society. It's so deeply ingrained even in things like our language. So we sit here in the Garden of Ideas and the language we use over there is a beautiful tree. But in a lot of Eastern languages, it would be expressing as a tree or made of tree. So the story of separation in Western society is very, very ingrained. And I wondered if you may give us your thoughts on the stories of separation, where they've come from and where they may be going.
That's an excellent and very timely question. And I think it's as simple as looking at the Oxford Dictionary. In the Oxford Dictionary, you will read that humans are distinct from nature. And I would like to expand what you already mentioned about Eastern kind of philosophy and way of conceiving life, taking it back to Andean cosmologies such as the Aymara. In Aymara, there is the concept of material animism, which means that all materials are alive. When people are weaving, they say that finally when that object is finalized, it's breathing. And there's a mutual care and respect. And that takes us to this idea that we are deeply entangled, not only with the material, but also with like a cosmological view that is much higher, where everything is interconnected. And if you go to those indigenous communities, that's the only way they manage to be, you can call it sustainable, but that's the only way that they manage to sustain themselves and work within limits.
So you mean that every energy that is put in is kept in the object itself, or it is very beautiful and very much, well, what you see in other cultures more. Like if you look in Japan or like how people care and how they, the more energy is put in, the more, well, and then the flat side of it, the more value it gets. And it's translated and it is something that, well, I wish we would do that more, huh?
Exactly, and that's also deeply connected to understanding where things are coming from. When you really understand how much it costs to the earth to be having these elements removed, how much time takes to create, how much time does a culture takes to really get these kind of mechanisms. And going back to Japan, this idea of repair, things start having a very different meaning and therefore longevity.
actually already when we, our whole Western society, when we talk about consumers, it already goes wrong, huh? Because it's not talking about the use.
Exactly. It's not understanding the extractive practices. It's not understanding anything about the full supply chain. And it's not understanding also anything about the afterlife. And it's also not understanding how we humans have been damaging the planet for so long with any considerations, systemic considerations, going back to this idea of interrelationships.
It would be good for you to set the scene for us of where we currently are, you know, working as you do at the coalface of climate change. Can you give us a sort of broad picture of where we currently are with things?
I think we're in a really interesting moment. I mean, we already touched upon 6 of the planetary boundaries, the latest report from the Stockholm Resilience Center. So we're really in a terrible moment, really not up to any of the agreements that we have done in this kind of international political setting. At the same time as a response, I see this emergence, for example, with this idea of regeneration, in which the main concept is not doing enough bad is not enough. So again, sustainability within that concept. Sustainability is also contested. I have been recently in conferences, especially indigenous people, and for them sustainability is not a status quo, but a really holistic way of living with the resources. But sustainability in this kind of neoliberalism is just like a status quo of not doing enough. But regeneration instead is how can we provide health back to the planet? And what I see in academia, and I'm based now in a design school, is this creative energy towards there. And something to me really interesting is a lot of us that have arrived there, we kind of had the friction of going through very toxic industries and toxic eras. I know, I've been in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s. So this is to me like a reaction. And something that would be interesting is, can we form a new generation of creatives that didn't have to go through these toxic industries and can think already in bringing back health? Because we need to replenish. Again, it's just simply not enough doing a little bit less bad. So I think many people, and this is not only from the creative industry, you have people in agriculture, scientists, being very ambitious as a response to the catastrophic environmental state of the planet.
I'd like to go back again to the stories of separation and how they need to evolve. Before we started recording today, we talked about your origin and you said that you're from 4 different countries. But in a way, even that doesn't come near to describing who and what you are. You're a multitude. You are far more complex than that, and in relationship simultaneously to so many different things. And we sit here in this garden that is a very controlled space, and there's been a lot of development in things like nature rights. You know, I know that there's rivers that have been granted the same rights as humans. But in fact, what we need to do is go further than that, of course, not just grant rights for nature, but in fact, just recognize that we're in symbiosis with nature all of the time, whether we recognize it or not. Like, how do you see things playing out? Where do you think the biggest opportunities in the sectors that we work in as designers and creatives, that we can start to focus our attentions to evolve those stories?
That's a very good question. And I think even before going into our designs, it's really important to reconceptualize humans as part of nature and have really embedded this idea that we really need to bring back health and be super considerate with what's next. So I think it starts really from reframing us as future humans. And then, of course, all our technologies, our practices, our creative endeavors come along with that. And I think adding to what you said, something that I am personally interested specifically in my teaching is this idea of more than human approaches. So really how to start considering not only other species, but also for inert matter. How do we, you know, really take care of that and become better custodians as well? And that also, I think it relates to sensibilities. I really like the work of Anat Singh. She has a concept of attunement. Because before you even start designing for or considering, you need to kind of feel the other. And I think we're so used to not being attuned with all these little elements So I think we need to start really from within, then to this idea of listening, observing, deeper, caring, and then design, architecture, or any kind of, yeah, science will follow.
Would that be starting always from balance? So starting from like balance with any resources, any energy, any understanding of the user, what it's needed? Would that be like the new starting point for you then?
Yes, I think balance is a tricky concept because who defines what balance is? Harmony, in a way, takes us to balance, but I think it's a little bit more profound. And I think what is really interesting about this era is there's no toolkit. There's no, you know, prescription exactly what we need to do. But I think if we all kind of have that very integrated and we really make our best to live within, again, these boundaries and being very considerate and give back more than what we take, I think slowly, yeah, we're getting closer.
Whenever you're in meetings or having conversations, are there any questions that you wish were being asked but aren't?
Yes. I mean, one of my biggest interests is the role of policies. I think as I'm going to bring back this to creative alternative futures, we're doing a lot of work in academia. We can do more and we should do more. Industry, we have some things, you know, popping up, which is great. But I think it's about this ethical role of policy and how much more all of us need to be connected in order to make top impactful shifts all across. And also in a coordinated manner, that's as well. For example, now we have like the EU with the Green Deal. In terms of fashion, it's an advancement. We're going to have digital passports, which will allow us to understand a little bit more the very opaque supply chain that we're dealing with.
But that's exactly where you're at, a little bit more.
Yes.
And that's the problem
already.
That's
the problem. That's the problem, as you say. And it's, as a planet, we're not integrated with this. So Europe is doing better, but we have other countries that are not collaborating. So
there is no full transparency, right? Would that be the starting point anyways? Like to understand, not even if people do better or if they are in harmony, or but just the reality of where we actually stand to be able to go further?
I think transparency is essential. And we've been living in a world that is really corrupt in that way. And also, it's going back to design and comfort. It's comfortable not to know and not to understand. That really allows us not to care. So transparency is a good start point. But I think in addition, as humans and as creatives, being here in this design week, is the once we have transparency, is this idea that we are agents of change, and then we need to intervene to change these kind of systems that we're now very aware they're completely toxic and unsustainable.
That's true. But of course, when there is no full transparency, even the systems that are set up for change, think about Amnesty International, for instance, if you like, they're set up to change, they're set up to raise the flag, they're set up to interfere. But the moment that there is no understanding what is really happening, they are always stopped at a closed door. I think there is will to change for like in specific parts, but there is not the ability because they are protected by an opaque industry and protected by if you don't know, you cannot prosecute.
Exactly. You know, going back to this idea of there's no coherent system. You have Global North and Global South. I mean, I always think that whenever you speak about Global South, there's also specificity, so you cannot even standardize it. But just to give you an example, in the case of Chile, there's like the main fast fashion dumping site. So in the EU, we can have all this, you know, digital passports, Green Deal, but then all the clothing and it's mostly synthetics that we don't use here, go to either Africa in the case of Europe, but the US, China, Canada, it goes to Chile. And once things arrive to a free zone in Chile, all that synthetic mass goes to the desert. There's no understanding whatsoever of what's happening in that dump site. So Europe can have all this incredible digital passport, but then going back to what you're saying about full accountability and transparency, we need to have the same transparency in all these kind of waste colonial destinations.
Yeah, 100%. If there's no accountability for what you use in any step of the supply chain, doesn't matter if it's supply chain or if it's the brands or if it is the users, all of them should be accountable through transparency. Like, and the moment that you stop using something or you don't sell something, where it goes is an accountability. And I think transparent passports are just the first step of giving some transparency, but that has nothing to say with accountability yet. And that's legislation to make people accountable for the raw materials they dare to use, the raw materials they dare to transform in a product, and then also to discard.
Absolutely. You're right. We should have the same care for the extractive practice, but also we should not forget the idea of the grave. So that extension, I think you pointed out that something is, yeah, it's essential and has to be fully integrated.
So you started with creating new, of no, the new creators of the future, the new designers. And now looking at the society, it is based on the consumer. So the moment of sale is actually the moment that every designer is designing for, where it's already a weird moment. Would you say that for the designer of the future, they are always designing for grave?
That's what I try to do with my students. It's definitely, I ask that question. I don't let that go. So what's the end of life? Can it be disassembled? Can it be recycled? Can it be, you know, dissolved? But I think ultimately, going back to the problem of fashion design, we don't need that amount of fashion designers overproducing, because that's not going to conduct us to anywhere. I think we need, and that's something that I'm impressed with fashion designers, and I'm there because I kind of really like their unbounded imaginaries. Then I bring kind of seriousness and more like accountability, ecological practices. But to me, in the future, a fashion designer should not just be designer. They can be integrated, for example, in NGOs. They can be working in supply chain. They can be making amazing decisions in terms of more environmental supplies they want to use. I had a really interesting conversation with an RCA MA graduate. Her name is Maria Arroyo, and she's now working in Fashion for Good in supply chains. And she said, like, whenever you think about supply chains, you think it's about like mapping out who are the biggest actors, where are the leverage points, but actually designers themselves, by not pushing the right decisions within the company, and that's even in the position of the creative director, you're still blocking. So a designer can be a super important enabler or a massive blocker. And I think we're not talking also about that role and responsibility that designers have, even in the role of a creative direction.
So if a designer doesn't understand the end of life, if a designer, they are the instigator of the problem.
Absolutely.
So creativity should be in the boardroom, but well-educated creativity.
Yes, we need responsible creatives at this point. And I, not by saying that, I think they should not be very imaginative, all the opposite. Even in my own practice, I push them. I'm like, what's the aesthetic of the future? It's not like everything is beige and dull. I don't want to live in that future. Future can be amazing, could be completely revisioned. So please bring all of your crazy ideas on board, but I cannot let you go completely non-caring about, yeah, all this supply chain and futures as well.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to ask a question specifically about, well, we're here in Milan Design Week. There's a lot of furniture on show. There's a lot of architecture, a lot of fashion, a lot of brands showing up. As I understand it, in order to hit target terms, we're going to have to retrofit every building in Europe over time. I mean, that amounts to something like a half a billion buildings, I believe. And this is because we don't have the hydrocarbons to be able to mine the minerals to retrofit those buildings. We're going to have to transform how we live. which means we're going to have to introduce biomes to our buildings. We're going to have hot zones and heated zones. We're going to have to change our clothing in order to have suits that would make it appropriate to be able to not turn on heating. And this is all fascinating for fashion designers or architects or, you know, anyone working within the built environment. It would be interesting to get your thoughts on how you build in first the responsibility we've been talking about, the understanding that the role of a designer comes with a great responsibility to be very aware of the context of the changing world, and also how you do that in a way that frames it up as inspiring and shows the opportunity rather than the opposite, which can be very overwhelming for any designer and kind of could give up hope.
Completely. And it is a topic that I'm very fan of for many reasons. And that's also a reason why I'm in Milan. With the RCA, we're showing for the first year with architecture and city design, kind of showing the relevance of also integrate these layers. Because if you think that maybe the building of the future also has to do with the person in not expecting 23 degrees all across every room, we need to work with textile designers. We need to work with fashion designers to create also the right kind of homeware to be able to survive in this house of the future. This also takes me back to a real project I did working with fashion designers and architects. I had a residency at the Design Museum. And actually, the title of the project was A Not Too Comfortable Future. And we came up with this idea. The concept is from an architecture historian. His name is Daniel Barber. And he claims that architecture is extremely complicit with this kind of carbon glorification. Architects, at the same time, all these new students coming in, their dream is to build a house, to, you know, do their opera magna. They don't think of, oh, I'm going to retrofit a house. So we need to change the mindset. The same way that I think for fashion designers is relevant not to think they're going to be the next, you know, cool designers, that they could do so much more in different areas of the much needed places that we need their vision and pushes. So we need to also understand them that retrofitting something can be amazing if done creatively. And we also need to provide them, at least in education, where I'm at, with that creative space to do things that are incredible, which are the new materials. We have so much advances in biomateriality, bioproduction. We have all these groups that are saying we have to retrofit. But we always need these students, this new generation, kind of breaking that old school idea of what an architect used to be,
yeah,
to what it could be. And again, it can be amazing, can be fun, can be beautiful, can be, you take an amazing, you know, you can have an amazing portfolio, but it's just different. And that's what we need to do. We have to integrate different layers. We need to look back also. There are many things that we've learned from the past that can be pushed further, either in ancestral ways or also really pushed with amazing technologies that we have. And also, this is not the end of creativity, but all the opposite. It's a new avenue for creatives, but we just need to demolish these kind of old ideas that have taken us here.
Very inspiring. Thank you.
Yeah, for creatives, it is more like it's all new open doors. It is reimagining what is there, but not building the same product, but building on top of the product with a different angle to it. So I think it's actually, it's very inspiring and it gives a lot of chance.
I think so too, and I'm very inspired, and this is an inspiring moment for me despite the awareness that I have. I also see how this creative energy is generating amazing things, and I think that's also a way not to do what I'm seeing a lot, like terrible design nowadays, which is these new generations of students just looking back. They have digital media, they see, I don't know how many images, so when you see what they show you, it's like so many references without any depth. And then there's nothing interesting. Even when they try to be, you know, looking back and trying to reinterpret, it's much more interesting exactly what you say. All this field that can be all done, revisioned. And again, because we're in the design ground, this comes with new aesthetics. And that's something I'm kind of really craving to see more.
It's so inspiring to hear. And it feels like you said that you've worked in toxic industries in the past, but it feels like you have hope. Would I be fair in saying that? You have faith in humanity and the future?
I do have faith. I have glimpses of faith that keeps me here. Yeah, and makes me want to stay providing what I've seen and pushing things in education at the moment. I want to work more with industry. And I definitely want to engage more with policy, because what we're not having yet is the scale of the transformations that we need. So there's also, personally for me, a long road. And I hope in some more years I see these two other elements also catching up, both industry and also policymaking.
You have faith, but we were discussing the last day. So what was the first moment that you actually lost faith?
Well, I was born in dictatorship, so I kind of, upon my arrival, things were very constrained, but somehow these frictions, or when you see so much hopelessness, going back to the idiot came with great questions, brilliant, inspiring questions that permeate until today. So I also have that belief sometimes where we kind of really hit the wall hard, or we completely lose faith. There is something that, like a phoenix, you know, there's a phoenix moment where like everything rebuilds and you're like full of conviction, because like, yeah, there's no other way really.
Wow. So you lost faith on day one and you've been spent your whole life getting it back.
Completely. So that's why I'm here.
Yeah. And do you have any final rallying cry to the design and creative communities?
Yeah, is why. I mean, I personally, I'm not a maker. So all my projects are always collaborating with creatives that are intuitively driven to make. For example, the Design Museum project, they gave me that residency and I'm like, now I need creatives. So I kind of curate the group and orchestrate it. But I don't make anything. It terrifies me, because everything I put out there to me is like a sin. So I'm like completely inhibited of making anything. So yeah, I think a really important question is why in the first place?
So it's
how?
Not, it's not a rallying cry, it's a rallying why. I love that.
I'm going to take this along in every conversation I have in the coming week. Before I'm going to thank you.
It's the idiotic question.
That for sure. But before I'm going to thank you, I want to do a little shout out to Nutra that helps us to make this podcast possible. So thank you for that. Luis from that, they're an amazing guys. I love their product. But I am going to ask them why. And thank you for not only inspiring, but also making me bring a lot of new thoughts into the next conversation. So I'm very happy that you were also one of our first conversations. And I hope to meet you very often again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for giving this platform. I think it's really important also to reach out. I'm generally in academia, but I think this is an amazing platform either to kind of relate more to the general public, but perhaps also to industry. So yeah, this is to me like a vital kind of touch point. So thanks for allowing this.
It's just the start.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.
Delphina.
Thank you.
Thank you, Delphina. Again, if anyone would like more information about Delphina's work, you can find information in the links. Now on to Pasquale Junior Natuzzi. Pasquale is the son of Pasquale Natuzzi, the founder of Natuzzi furniture brand in Italy. And Pasquale is really thinking a lot about how we can both maintain and evolve the organization for the future. Enjoy the conversation.